episode of All Was Well Versed. All my lovelies out there. Guys, look, we've got a new space. I told you, we're in a new recording space. We got a new office. Guys, I got my double monitor set up. I got a ring light. Like, guys, I'm for real. Like, I'm for real trying to be a content creator out here, okay? So, thank you guys for all the love on the last episode. I know it was probably weird, me, you know, not being on camera after I said season two, we're on camera. But hey, you gotta give the people what they want. And that's the content, okay? So today, okay, I do have to apologize to all of my lovely, lovely listeners out there. I know I've been said that me and Dez were gonna do this episode. When I thought of this episode, I was like, this is the one. This is the one for me and Dez, right? But it just didn't work out. So we're going to keep him. He's too rare of a commodity to bring out all the time. So we're just going to leave him tucked away. And when we start talking about Saga again, because Saga came back. I don't know if you guys knew, but Saga is back and they just dropped a new volume and he's going to get back on it. So we're going to go back to doing our duo episodes for Saga. So today we're flying solo dolo per usual, but that's okay. It's fine. It's fine. But we're, like I said, guys, season two, we are full of hot takes. And here's another one, okay? This is another hot take. And I feel like it's a really specific hot take, but if your interests overlap like mine with anime and with games, this is going to be right up your alley. So guys, sit back, relax, get your water, get your snack, get your glass of wine, get your brewski, because today I've got a hot take. We are going to talk about how Attack on Titan Season 4 is a better Last of Us 2 than The Last of Us 2. And I know that title sounds kind of like a mouthful, but just give me a minute and I will explain. Attack on Titan Season 4 is a better Last of Us 2 than The Last of Us 2 was. And I will die on that hill. So today we are going to, we're just off the rails, okay? We're a glass of wine deep. And we're just going to talk about how Attack on Titan did a game better than its own game did. So if you're not familiar, we're going to talk about The Last of Us. I'm going to talk about a little bit about game one to set up for game two. And then we'll talk a little bit about game two. And then we'll talk about Attack on Titan Season 4. So guys, this is the biggest spoiler warning of my life. If you are not completely finished with Attack on Titan, the final season, turn it off. Cut it off. You know, you want the views, but not today. Cut it off. If you're not caught up, cut it off. It's fine. Come back when you're done. If you haven't played Last of Us 2, take it or leave it. If you haven't played number two, at least have played number one. I'll give you that. If you've played number one, that's good enough, okay? So we're going to take a little sippy sip. And we're just going to jump right into it, okay? So The Last of Us Part 2 is a sequel. If you can't tell, it is literally a part two to The Last of Us. Last of Us Part 2 came out in 2020. And it was developed by Naughty Dog Studios and was a PlayStation exclusive. So if you have an Xbox, I do apologize sincerely from the bottom of my heart that you were not able to play this game. But what can you do? What can you do? And then for Attack on Titan, a pretty long-running anime series, actually debuted 2013, but season four, the final season, aired and finished in 2021. So I was a little bit late finishing it, but the one nice thing about the Attack on Titan community is they're really good about spoilers. Like, if you're not done, I'm not like tiptoeing around on the internet, but they're really good about like non-spoilers. So yeah, like I said, guys, this is your last chance. If you're not completely caught up and finished Attack on Titan, the last season, or the final season, that's actually what it's called, the final season. And if you at all care about The Last of Us Part 2 and that hasn't been spoiled for you, jump ship. Get out. Go listen to my last episode. Go listen to the Saga episode with me and Dez. Tune back in next week. I understand. It's fine. I forgive you. So let's talk about The Last of Us 2. At least we're going to set it up, okay? For those unfamiliar, we're going to talk about The Last of Us Part 1. which was a perfect game. Just chef's kiss. Perfect game. Let's put this down. Perfect game. So good. Okay, so The Last of Us, part one. The game sets place in like a, it's a post-apocalyptic United States after some, it's a virus. It's like a fungal virus breaks out and it's like turning people into zombies, right? So it's like a whole thing. Society collapses, you know, typical zombie apocalypse. You seen Walking Dead? You get it. So you play as Joel. He's our main protagonist. And Joel, he's this like, you know, dad age guy, but he's like rough and grizzled. Is that the term? Rough and grizzled? Because his daughter dies like in the prologue of the game. Like right when like shit's hitting the fan and like, you know, buildings are exploding and zombies are munching necks and blah, blah, blah. His daughter gets bopped. And so he's like depressed and, you know, doesn't have a will to live anymore, but like he just kind of keeps living. And so through this apocalypse event, the world has basically devolved into different factions. And each of these factions, they have like their own goals and their own agendas, right? But then, of course, you like have the people that live on like the outskirts of these factions that kind of, they wouldn't, people that don't claim to be part of a faction, but just kind of like, you know, coexist, you know, will do favors for them or do like mercenary work for them. So Joel is a guy like that, right? So he works as a smuggler in Texas and he gets enlisted by one of these factions called the Fireflies. And his job is to smuggle a teenage girl. And you're like, what? Yeah. His job is to smuggle this teenage girl named Ellie. Out of a quarantine zone, and he's supposed to take her to their, like, main camp in Massachusetts. So it's kind of a long trek, right? So not only does he have to sneak into this faction, break her out, but then they have to travel literally, like, half of the United States to get her to this, to their main camp, right? And so he agrees to do it. And so then throughout the game, it's kind of like an escort mission type. Like, if you've ever played, the only one I can think off the top of my head is, like, a Resident Evil 4 type where, like, you've got your escort and she can like kind of interact with things and do things for you / with you. And so it's a situation like that where like you're trying to, you break her out and then you're literally traveling cross country to go to Massachusetts. And it was, it's a really, the feelings in this game, it really tugs on your heartstrings because like I said, the game starts with literally Joel's daughter dying. And so like, that's kind of a reason why he was so hesitant to take up this mission because he didn't want to get attached to like another little girl, right? But then like through playing the game, like through the events of the game, they really start bonding and like building this like father-daughter relationship. And so whenever they make it to Massachusetts to their main base, they get taken to this their main hospital. And in the events leading up to them getting to the base, there's like a fight that happens and Ellie gets knocked unconscious or she's like, she's in an accident. And she almost drowns. So she's unconscious. Right. So when Joel arrives, he's like carrying her like unconscious body and was like, I got her, you know? And then come to find out that the reason why the Fireflies wanted her so bad is, they believe that they can create a vaccine for this fungal infection from Ellie, because here's the twist, because I don't even remember how far into the game that you learned this, but Ellie, for some reason, she's immune. She gets bitten and doesn't turn into a zombie. And so the Fireflies, their whole deal is like, we've tried it and it hasn't worked before, but like this is like the first kid that we found that is a seemingly immune, and like we're pretty positive we can create a vaccine that can literally save humanity, right? But here's a kicker. There's always a kicker. Here's a kicker. To make this vaccine, they literally will need to cut into her brain, like dissect her brain and it literally killing her, right? And so Joel is left with this decision. Do I let Ellie go for the sake of literal humanity or nah? And to my surprise, to I'm sure a lot of people's surprise, Joel is unwilling to let Ellie die. Because like I said, if you think about it, the game literally starts with him losing his daughter. You spend hours and hours of gameplay with these two characters building this literal father-daughter bond. And he really feels like that's his kid, you know what I mean? So like, as selfish as it is, Joel was like, no, you can't kill her. And so, but of course the Fireflies, they're not going to just go down easy. They're like, we literally have her on the operating table. Like, we're not going to just let you walk out of here, right? So Joel kind of goes on a rampage and, like, ends up killing the main surgeon and, like, you know, some other nurses and stuff. And Kid kidnaps Ellie, like, takes her back, and they book it out of there. And the game literally ends. It's so, like... it's so good. The game literally ends with them driving away. Like, Joel's driving and Ellie's in the back seat and she's like just coming to. And, you know, Joel tells her, hey, you know, sadly, the Fireflies, they weren't able to make a cure and they decided to give up trying. Like, you were their last hope and they couldn't do it. So they decided to give up. And Ellie, feels really bad about it. She has a lot of, like, survivor's guilt because that was literally, like, her mission in life was to make it to Massachusetts to help create this cure that's literally going to save humanity, and then to wake up and find out that it didn't work. So she's, like, kind of in disbelief, and she makes Joel swear to her that he's telling her the truth. And he says, yeah, it's the truth. And then it just cuts to black, and that's the end of the game. And you're like, oh my God, so emotionally charged, bro. And so then part two, Last of Us Part Two, it takes place 5 years after the conclusion of the first game. And so the interesting thing about The Last of Us Part Two is that the story, number one, the story does not take place linearly. So there's a lot of flashbacks. There's a lot of, like, events that kind of happen. Like, you play through events and then it'll be like a time jump and then you play through some more stuff, because Last of Us Part One was pretty much a linear timeline, at least not like a linear on rails game, but the timeline was linear. But with this one, there's a lot more jumping around, a lot more flashbacks, a lot of POV shifts, and so when the game starts, Joel and Ellie, right off the bat, you can tell they, like, have a really strained relationship. So you have to remember, so in the first game, I think Ellie was 14. She was a kid. She was either 13 or 14. And so then this one takes place 5 years later. So she's, like, a young adult at this point, you know. And, yeah, like I said, you can tell her and Joel, like, they still live together or whatever, but, like, they don't have, like, a good relationship. And so, and the reason for this is she ends up learning about the events that happened at the Firefly Hospital, not from Joel. That's the key point. It's not Joel that told her, like, that he was, like, selfish and literally just kidnapped her from these people that could have made the vaccine. But she learns, like, secondhand about it. And so she's, like, really pissed about it because, like I said, she has a lot of, I guess you would call it survivor's guilt. Like, to think that you have this one mission in life and then to be, like, knocked out and then wake up and then learn, like, oh no, JK, we're, like, not doing that. She really feels some kind of way about it. So they have, like, a very strained coexistence going on. And so, at the camp, at whatever the encampment that they live in, Joel's brother, Tommy, also lives there. And so, one day, Joel and Tommy, they go out, like, on a, you know, routine patrol, and they end up finding a group, and I think the group is, like, 5 or 6 people. They end up running into a group, not from their camp, that's being attacked by zombies, right? So, being on patrol, they do what they do. They help out, they help kill the zombies, help them from getting eaten, but there's a snowstorm coming in. So, all of the gang, so the new group that they found, plus Joel and Tommy, they all decide to go, back to the people's camp and hunker down because literally a blizzard is blowing in. And you learn that the group are former Fireflies. So after the events at the hospital with Joel and Ellie, because the people that got bopped from Joel's rescue mission for Ellie were some of the main guys, right? So you got, like, the main surgeon, a lot of the main people in charge. So, like, after that happened, the Fireflies kind of disbanded. They kind of just broke down into other entities, right? And so the group that Joel and Tommy run into are former Fireflies. And the group that they now fuck with, I guess, is called the Washington Liberation Front, or the WLF. That's what you see it referred to a lot through the game. And so one of the people in the group, I guess you'd say the leader of the group is this lady named Abby. She actually reveals herself as being the daughter of the head surgeon that Joel killed all those years ago, rescuing Ellie. And literally since that night, Abby has wanted revenge for the man that killed her dad and ruined her life. And so she's literally just been out here looking for Joel, like tracking him down and trying to find him. And lo and behold, she ran into him. And so the group, they end up attacking Tommy and Joel, knocks out Tommy, and then literally begin to torture Joel. Like, they, like, break his leg and, you know, it's a whole thing. And so after some hours go by and they don't come back home, because like I said, it was supposed to be a routine patrol. So after they don't come home, Ellie starts to get worried because, you know, the blizzard's coming in and everything. And so she decides to go out and look for them. And so Ellie goes out, and then she's accompanied by her girlfriend, Dina, and then a mutual friend of theirs, this guy named Jesse, who, little fun fact, little aside, is Dina's ex-boyfriend, but we'll come back to that. So Ellie and co end up finding the WLF group, and actually, other way around. They're out, Ellie and co are out looking for the WLF group. But then they surprise ambush them, and then they kind of get taken back to their camp, back to Joel and Tommy. And Abby and the group literally hold Ellie down and make her watch as they execute Joel. And this is literally first 25 minutes of the game, right? And so after that happens, Ellie declares revenge on them. She's like, Abby, I'm gonna fuck you up. You know, you killed my dad. Your dad's already dead. My bad. But then, so the group leaves. They, like, leave Joel's dead body, and they fuck off. And so then the next day, Tommy, he decides that he's gonna go track them down because you're not just gonna kill my brother like that, right? And so Tommy leaves the camp and goes off to search for them. But then Ellie is also not gonna sit around and wait for Joel to get revenged. So her and Dina end up taking off also, kind of like following in Tommy's foot tracks. And that's how the game starts. And you're like, bro, this is literally, like, I'm looking at my notes, this is literally prologue of the game. Like, this is how the game starts, is with Joel getting fucked up and executed. Like, our literal main character from the last game just gets executed in the first, like, 15 minutes of the game. And you're just like, okay, I thought we were playing as Joel, bro. I thought we were having a good time. Whoo. So, that's kind of the backstory for The Last of Us. And then we're going to do a little brief summary of Attack on Titan. And then we're going to bring them together, okay? So, Attack on Titan, it's funny because it's not zombies, but it's still like a post-apocalyptic type, you know, you're fighting for your life out here type situation. So, with Attack on Titan, it's set in a world where humanity lives inside, it's like three main cities, but the cities are surrounded by these giant walls, and the walls are there to protect them from these giant literal titans. So they're like these giant humanoid type monster creature things where their whole deal, like literally their whole deal is to eat guys. Like, they just love eating guys. And so the whole thing is they have these giant ass walls to protect the city from these titans. And then you have, of course, you like have the military or whatever. You have like your scouts that go out and they're trying to, you know, see what's out there. Cause the thing is literally society has lived in these walls for like hundreds of years. So like, they don't even know like what's out there. You know what I mean? Like, the farthest they've ever been out is like, you know, a few miles. They don't know what's out there. So, and the whole thing is you as the viewer, and also the people in the show, they don't know why the giants are there. They don't know if they have an objective. Why do they love to eat humans? Like, why is that their favorite thing to munch on? So basically they're just a menace. They're just a literal menace to society. And so our main story follows this kid named Aaron Yeager and his two best friends, Mikasa and Armin. And so the show starts where they're still kids, and there's two, like, variant titans that literally bust through the outermost wall of their encampment, of their world, you know? And I say variant because the whole thing with the titans are, they're like humanoid, like they're big as fuck, but like they still kind of look like people. Their whole thing is like they have hair, you know, they got these creepy ass faces or whatever, but like these two that break through the wall, they're like actually different, like they look different. One of them has like really hard skin, the other one is fucking huge, like way bigger than any other titan they've ever seen. And so they bust through the wall and leave a giant hole, as you would. And then all of the titans start rushing in. And so the outer third most part of the city, a bunch of them died. And then they all had to retreat inward, like one wall in. So when that event happens, not only did they lose a total of 20% of the total population, but Aaron's mom... her mom gets eaten literally in front of him. He sees the titan pick her up and just munch. And then his dad goes missing. And so then there's like a little time skip where it's 3 years later. And then Aaron and Mikasa and Armin, they all decide to enlist in the army to help fight slash protect against these titans. And then as the show goes on, you just like, you're learning a lot about like why the titans are there and like what could be going on. And so then when season 4 happens, so like you learn some crazy ass shit at the end of season 3, and then when season 4 starts, it's just actually wild. It's just actually wild. So I'm not gonna super go into Attack on Titan season 4 yet, because I really want to talk about how does it compare to The Last of Us. Okay, so let me get comfy, let me take a little sip. Just think about it. Just let it sit. Let it digest for a minute. You know, Last of Us 2. Oh, you know, we got our main protagonist. We love him. He ended up killing a guy. And then the daughter wants revenge. And then now this other daughter, she wants revenge. Okay, think. Just let it sit. Let it think about it. Just for a minute. Okay. So, how is Attack on Titan better? How does Attack on Titan do The Last of Us better than The Last of Us Part 2? So, my biggest gripe, truly, about The Last of Us Part 2 is the order of events. And I say that because when you're playing The Last of Us Part 2, you actually play as Abby at the beginning of the game, right? And so you're playing the game, you don't know who she is, you don't know her backstory, you don't know the people she's rolling with, you're just like, I thought this was The Last of Us, I thought I was playing as Joel and Ellie, like, where are my guy, like, where's my guy, right? And so then, and like I said, I'm not exaggerating when I say that when she kills Joel, that's literally first, like, 20 minutes of the game, right? Like, you've just popped it in, you just sat down, you got your controller charged, you're ready to play as Joel, and you literally watch him get executed in the first 20 minutes of the game, right? And so when she kills Joel, you as the player are like, oh, fuck this girl, like, Abby who? Like, I don't care about you, right? And so then when you switch to Ellie, you're like all gung-ho for her revenge plot, right? So that's a thing. So you play as Abby at the beginning, you capture Tommy and Joel, you kill Joel, and then it switches back to Ellie. And then you're playing as Ellie for, I tried to look it up, but it was a little tough, but you play as Ellie for like the next 5 to 8 hours of the game, like hours of the game. And then it goes back in time and you're like, okay. And then it's a POV switch. You're playing as Abby in the past after 8 hours of playing as Ellie, tracking down Abby, and you're like, okay. So then the weird thing about it is, like, when these POV switches happen and like when these like flashback episodes happen, it's just tough because you're like meeting people in Abby's crew and you're expected to like them and like fuck with them and like be behind their motivations and stuff, but like you literally watch them kill our main protagonist. Like, I'm not gonna care about you. You know what I mean? And then also the fact that as you're playing as Ellie, you're going through and you're literally trying to track down Abby and her crew. So you're running into friends of hers. You're running into, like, you know, people that she lives in the same encampment as her. And you're killing people as you go along. You know, you're going to kill anybody that's in your way of, like, avenging your dad. And so then whenever you have your POV switch and it goes back in time and you're playing slash interacting with these characters that you literally just killed as Ellie, you, like, can't get invested. You know what I mean? Because, like, you already know that they're dead. And not only are they dead, but, like, they tried to kill your main character. So you're like, I don't care about you, right? And then the weirdest thing about it all is just, like, the pivotal, most important flashback that happens with Abby is it happens in, like, the last third of the game. And because here's the thing. So, like, when I set up the story for you, I said that Abby was the daughter of the dad that Joel killed. You literally don't know that until the last third of the game. And so, like, you're playing the whole game and you're like, why is this bitch so mad at Joel and, like, trying to kill Ellie? You know what I mean? And so then when you get this pivotal flashback of, like, oh, you see Abby as a little kid and, like, you see her go through the trauma of, like, her dad getting murdered, not in front of her, but, like, in the same building as her, and her having to find his body and then trying to, like, navigate life without him. Okay, that's sad, but, like, could I have had that motivation 20 hours ago? You know what I mean? Like, I just felt like it was, like, not too little too late, but it was just, like, the scenes that are supposed to make you really empathize and care for your character, for your, like, not even, she's not even the antagonist, but, like, your main opposition in the story happens so late in the story that, like, I don't care. Like, my feelings for her are not there. And so I say all that to say, when you compare that to Attack on Titan season 4, final season, the literal first 4 episodes of season 4, you're following your quote-unquote main antagonists, the Marleyans. So at the end of season 3 is when you learn that not only is there, like, another society outside of the walls, but, like, they as a people are kind of brainwashed, brought up to think a certain way that our main character guys are the enemy. And their whole thing is that they set out to destroy our main guys, right? Almost like with Ellie and Abby, right? And so, but here's the thing. You end season 3, you get this bombshell of, like, not only are we not alone in the world, but, like, not only is there a whole nother civilization, but, like, their whole deal is that they want to fuck us up. That's, like, the end of season 3. When you start season 4, literally the first 4 episodes are following the Marleyans. Like, I remember watching it with Anthony, and it was, like, after episode 2, I was like, but where are the boys? Like, where are my boys? Like, where's Aaron? And where's Mikasa? Like, these Marleyans, I don't give a fuck about them. And that's the thing, like, you're watching, as you're watching the show and you're learning about the Marleyans, and then you learn about, like, Reiner and Berthold's whole thing, and even with Annie, her whole thing, you're just like, but I don't care. Like, you guys are the enemy, you know what I mean? But then, like, you watch the beginning of season 4, and then you start to empathize with these characters. You start to see their motivations. You're like, okay, I see why you guys are pretty much brainwashed into thinking that our main crew are the devils. Like, you start to empathize with why this whole war is even going on, and, like, why Reiner and Berthold felt such conviction to ruin society. And that's so different from The Last of Us, because in Attack on Titan, like I said, like, it's not like a flashback situation. It's not like, you know, you're flipping between Aaron and then you're going to the Marleyans with Gabi and with Reiner. And then all those, they all have, like, weird names, but, like, all of the Marleyans or whatever. It's not like you're flipping back and forth. Like, it was so smart from the, because I'm assuming, from what I've heard, is that the anime is, like, a pretty one-to-one adaptation of the manga. And so, like, that's what's so smart from the writer, because he really lets it sit. You know what I mean? Like, he puts you in with the Marleyans. He puts you in with, like, the quote-unquote enemy. And then by the end of episode 4, you're really sympathizing with them, because you're like, okay, before we knew about them, we just thought they were some crazy guys out there that were more technologically advanced than us. And for whatever reason, they're really just trying to, like, murder us all. But then you see that, like, it's literally, like, they have children in an army. You see that it's, like, a rite of passage, like, fighting in this army and, like, how the Titans are made and, like, how they're just set off to literally go and fuck them up. And then you see, like, you really sit with Gabi. And I think that was so smart, following Gabi specifically, because she's a younger kid and her whole dream is to be one of the nine Titans. But you see what it means to be one of the nine Titans. So, like, as the season is progressing, even as the character, like, for Gabi, she's realizing that, like, being one of the nine, like, isn't great. Like, sure, you have this crazy, unique Titan power, and you're literally one of the pillars in the military, but, like, you're still looked down upon because you can turn into a Titan. You still have, like, a set lifespan, because what is it? Like, I think if you're one of the nine, you can only... I think you only live for 13 years after you take up the power. So, like, you have this set time span. Lifespan. And then you really... Especially with Reiner, because with Reiner, you, when you first learn about his betrayal, back in, like, what was that, season 2, I think? When you learn that he is the Armored Titan, and then, yeah, when he and Berthold try to leave and kidnap Eren, you, when that happens, you're like, oh, there's no way I can, like, fuck with Reiner and with Berthold. Like, they're the enemy. If whatever happens to them happens to them, like, whatever. But then, like, after the time skip happens and you see it from the Marleyan side, like, how the people that can turn into Titans, even though they're in the army, they're still looked down upon. And, like, Reiner just has, like, such, I guess you would even call it survivor's guilt. Like, he's just out here really trying to kill himself. Like, he's, like, done with it. Like, he's so over it. Like, he's watched all his friends either die or hate him now. And he just sees it almost like a pointless war. And so, like I said, the first four episodes really let you sit with these characters, these Marleyans. And so then by the time at the end of season, or at the end of episode 4, whenever Eren shows up and then, like, the whole thing happens, you're really conflicted. Because you're like, okay, well, Eren, that's our main guy. Like, that's our dude. But, like, these Marleyans, they're not so bad. And then, like, as the show goes on, or as the season goes on, and you really start to learn more about these characters and see their interactions with each other, and then you see the Marleyans' interactions, like, with our main cast, it really changes your perspective on our quote-unquote antagonists. And The Last of Us 2, I think, would have been so much better if it had anything similar to that, because, like, there's such separate factions for so long in the game. Like, you have Ellie and crew, and then you have Abby and crew for so long. Like, their motivations never cross over, or, like, their feelings toward each other, like, never get addressed really toward until, like, the end of the game. Like, it was just, I just feel like it was too segmented. Like, the writers just assumed, the writers of The Last of Us Part 2 just assumed that if you're playing as this character, then you're going to sympathize with her. But that's not an automatic. Like, just because I'm playing as Abby does not mean I'm at all invested in what she's trying to do. You know what I mean? Like, she's just the person I'm playing. Like, the person I care about is the person who I played 40 hours with and his daughter, and I just watched him get murdered. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think if The Last of Us 2 would have been ordered differently, slash, if we just would have had more time to sit with the other characters, instead of, like, starting off the game as Abby and then playing through and then murdering Joel, and then it goes back to Ellie, and then you play that long stretch as Ellie before you even, like, talk about Abby again, I think if it would have, like, I don't know, like, if you would have started, if the game would have started regular, like, with Joel and Ellie, like, having this strained relationship, like, they're not really getting along, they have this, like, unspoken dirt between them, well, Joel has this unspoken lie between them, and then you really get to like see them. But then if it would have been a switch to Abby, and if you would have known that her, that she was the daughter of the surgeon that Joel killed at the end of the last game, if you would have learned about that any earlier, I think that would have changed a lot. Because not knowing that until the last third of the game, you're like, it's too late. Like, I already killed all her friends. I've already seen her get fucked up, and I don't care. So, like, where's my sympathy supposed to come from? If they would have shown that, if the flashback, there we go. If that flashback of her as a kid in the hospital happened, like, first third of the game, I think it would have been a lot different. Because then you would have really understood her motivation. Like, sure, she says, like, oh, you know, I hate Joel, he ruined my life, but you're like, okay, but why? Like, I don't know why. But like, if you would have seen it 20 hours ago, it would have been a lot different. So I don't know, that's number one, order of events. If The Last of Us would have been ordered different, I think it would have been a different story, a good different story. And so my main point number two are the antagonist characters. And so I kind of spoke on it a little bit, but The Last of Us Part Two, like I said, you're at the, as the player, as your main POV focus, you're literally thrown into Abby's crew and the whole WLF, the now Fireflies or whatever. You're literally thrown into these characters and you're expected to care for their situation just because you're playing as her. And I think that is a real oversight by the writer slash director of this game, because the thing is, man, it's the end of the world. Like, it's a post-apocalyptic world. So like, no matter what faction or group or, you know what I mean? Like, no matter who you're following, they're all going through a similar type thing than our protagonists are. Like, sure, it's a little bit different with, like, Joel and Ellie. They had the opportunity to save the world. But, like, they're just, everyone's out here trying to survive, okay? Like, it's a zombie apocalypse. You're out here just looking for food, looking for water, trying to make, you know, a safe space to live. And, like, that's what everybody's trying to do. It's not just the WLF. It's not just Ellie and Joel's camp. Town, whatever. It's literally every faction throughout the world that's what they're doing. So like, just because I'm thrown in as Abby and co, and I learn about the WLF and, like, you know, their main objectives, and you learn to see her friends and stuff, it's like, I don't care. Like, why is this any different than, like, what I already know, if that makes sense? And so I just really felt like, okay, so what Abby has friends and, you know, has a backstory with different characters. Like, why do I as the player care? Like, the only thing I know is that Abby killed my main character, and like, now I can't fuck with her. And the difference from that to Attack on Titan is we see Reiner and Berthold. Literally, you learn that they are literally the ones that caused, like, the collapse of their society. Like, they are the two variant titans that broke the wall and caused everybody to, who caused 20% of the population to die, and for the world to literally get a third smaller. And then later on in the show, I think in season three, they break the second wall, and that was a whole thing with, like, everybody. They literally lost, like, 80% of their army out there trying to get to the wall to seal it with Aaron and co to seal it. But, and so you're watching this and you're like, okay, there's like no way, there's no way I can sympathize for Reiner and Berthold. Like, they're just out here, like, literally trying to kill our main characters. But then, like I said, when season four starts and you see the Marlians, you see how they decide, like, who gets to inherit the power of the variant titans, and why they feel so compelled to complete their mission. Because the thing is, the Marlians are, like, pretty much brainwashed into thinking that they are at fault. So, okay, I'm trying to really parse out, like, the story or whatever. So where our main characters are from is, we later learn, it's called Paradise Island. The whole thing, I'm watching it in in sub, so I'm not sure. Paradise Island. And so the whole thing is that you learn that all the people that live on the island, like where our main guys are from, they can all turn into Titans. And the reason why is all of the people that live there in Paradise Island came from Marley. And so the Marleyans believe that they are like the true race, the Marleyan humans that can't turn into Titans. They believe that like being able to turn into a Titan is like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like it's blasphemy. Like you shouldn't be able to have this kind of power. Like the reason why you can turn into a Titan is because you're not a true Marleyan. And then because of that, what they do is as like punishment for like when people like, you know, commit crimes or if you're found to be like trying to go against, you know, like the main religious factions or the military factions or anything like that, what happens is they inject you with a serum that will turn you into a Titan, and then they just kick you out and then just leave you out in the desert. So you learn that all the Titans that our guys have been fighting all these years are criminals from Marley that were kicked out and turned into Titans, right? And so you learn all this, and you really, and at this point, I don't even think that you like sympathize with our antagonist yet, but like by learning this and just how our main characters were, I mean, it's a little bit different because like literally the Titans are trying to destroy their world, but like as our main characters, you're brought up and taught to hate and try to kill these Titans, especially these like variant Titans that are smart and can communicate and are like trying to strategically destroy your whole civilization. But then on the flip side, you see it as the Marleyans. That's literally what they were told, is that the people that can turn into Titans are literally like blasphemous. Like they're lower than the earth. Like they're the reason why they're in this war. So like as a person that can turn into a Titan, like it's your duty, if you want to be a Marleyan, like to be like an honorary Marleyan, it's like your duty to be able to take up one of these variant Titans and like fuck up Paradise Island. And so you really start to see why, like I said, you start to see this, like why Reiner and Berthold and Annie had like this fervor for succeeding in their mission of destroying our main protagonists, because that's literally what they were brought up and raised and drilled into their brain, that like the only way for you to be good is to fuck up our guys. And because you get to spend so much time with the Marleyans, like in Marley, it's not like you're like talking about them or like it's a flashback, like you're in Marley and you're living with them and you're seeing these literal children out here fighting this war, hoping for the chance to become a Titan, literally shorten your lifespan and fight for these people that like don't even really care about them as people. They just care about the fact that they can turn into Titans. And I feel like that makes for a more compelling story than what happened in The Last of Us 2. And I say all that to say my main hiccup, I know I said that earlier, but like actually, my main hiccup, the reason why, the thing that made me think about this as an episode idea is the story devolving into a revenge cycle. So if you look at Attack on Titan, it would be really easy for the story to just devolve into a revenge cycle because you have our Paradise Island and you've got your Marleyans. So, okay, you've got Reiner and Berthold, who literally broke the wall, shrunk the total population by 20%, caused pandemonium, literally almost ruined everybody's life of all of our main characters, you know? And then you've got Paradise Island, who they killed Berthold, and they capture Annie. And Reiner gets out, but, like, he's got the survivor guilt or whatever. And so, and then you've got, and then it flips back to your Marleyans. And you've got Gabi, and her whole thing is, like, fuck Paradise Island. Like, they're the reason why we can't be Marleyans, because we only exist because, like, they can turn into Titans. And as you're following Gabi through the story, You get a lot of parallels with like how Erin was as a child. Like she's so like she has such fervor for wanting to like do good and like prove herself and be a to become a Titan and to do good for her nation. And like that's really how Erin was growing up. And the thing is, like, there's such a good scene in the show wherever she ends up getting captured by Erin and Mikasa, and they're like all in a room together. And the thing is, Armin is like, he's the diplomatic guy, you know what I mean? Like, he's trying to figure out, like, how can I stop so many people from dying? And Gabi was just like, what, are you going to kill me now? And he was like, he just kind of looked at her like she was crazy. He was like, you know, kill me, kill him, kill her. Like, all you and another guy I know, all you ever talk about is, like, killing. Like, why does it always have to be killing? And I feel like after that interaction, that's really when Gabi, like, switched as a character. Because really, up until that point, every time she could get a gun in her hand or she had the opportunity, she was, like, killing somebody. And it wasn't until she was interacting with her supposed enemy who was like, I'm not trying to kill you, girl. Like, I'm just trying to come to an agreement to, like, where we can stop literally fighting each other. It was then when she was like, wait, maybe I don't have to, like, be killing people just because people I know were wronged. And that's the pivotal difference between Attack on Titan and The Last of Us Part 2. Because even from the brief description I gave, The Last of Us Part 2 is pretty much just a revenge cycle. Like, game one ends with Joel killing Abby's dad. Game two starts with Abby killing Ellie's dad. And then Ellie's whole thing is she needs to get revenge on Abby, and so then you spend this whole game and you're following her, and then Dina ends up getting sick, and so then Ellie and Dina end up a lot of things happened, and like I said, Dina ends up getting sick, and so then Ellie and Dina decide to just go back home and kind of abandon their quest, right? And so there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens. Dina's pregnant by Jesse, and it's a whole thing. She has a kid, but then Ellie's out here being a family man, and you think they're like living a good life. They got this cute little farmhouse together, and you know, they got a garden, and they got a little baby boy. But then even with all of that, Ellie is just not content because she knows that Abby is out there. And so she literally leaves like her picturesque life to go back out and try to hunt down Abby. And then it was just kind of annoying because, like I said, like Ellie kind of had it made out. Like nobody that she, other than Joel, but like Dina didn't end up getting hurt. Like they have this nice life together. So, like, you're really telling me that you're really just going to, like, leave that behind and then go out just to find Abby again? And then when she finally does end up finding Abby, she's, like, at that point, like, Abby's been going through it because she got kidnapped by another faction and is, like, beat up and starved to death, and it's a whole thing. And then when Ellie finally finds her, she can't even kill her because she, like, starts to feel bad about it. But then she was just, like, oh, you know, I'm going to let you go, but, like, don't let me run into you again. And then ends up leaving. And it was just like, what is this ending? Like, if the game would have ended at the farmhouse, perfect. Not perfect, but better. It would have been better. But then, yeah, like I said, like, it wasn't even satisfying. Like, when she ran back into Abby and, you know, beats her up. But like I said, Abby was already in such bad shape that, like, it literally wasn't satisfying. And then by the time Ellie gets back home, Dina has left. Dina took their kid and left because she's like, I told you not to go. We literally already almost died for this. Like, you got to give it up. But she didn't. So Dina was like, see ya. And so, yeah, The Last of Us just kind of devolved into this revenge plot. It's like, okay, you killed a guy that I love, so I'm going to kill a guy that you love. So then therefore I got to kill a guy that you love. And kind of how I was saying before, Attack on Titan could have easily fallen into the same trap because both sides of our conflict, our Marleyans and our main characters, they both are fighting for something that they truly believe in, that they think in their heart of hearts is correct, is the way to be. But then somehow they end up finding this middle ground of like, okay, maybe what I was going through isn't so different from what you were going through, and kind of coming together on not even a common enemy, but like just realizing that like the things that were ingrained in them for so long might not be 100% truth, and willing to learn and change from that. And I feel like that's the main difference between like, let's just say like Gabi and like Mikasa and Armin versus like Ellie and Abby. I feel like even after all of their interactions and all of their scuffles or whatever, I don't feel like Ellie and Abby ever like saw each other on the same playing field. Whereas like with Gabi and then Armin and Mikasa, it's like, yeah, I can't really like get behind you killing all my guys, but I see why you thought you needed to do that. You know what I mean? And so after they, in Attack on Titan, after they learn about each other and learn about like where they came from and like why they're trying to do the things that they're trying to do, and then kind of having this common enemy of Eren, like, I mean, he's our main guy, but like he kind of is trying to end the world, coming together behind their main enemy, how they're able to put aside their differences, like literally generations of differences and like feelings that have been ingrained in each society, they're literally able to put that aside and work toward this common goal. And I feel like if Ellie and Abby were able to do something similar, the game would have been a lot different. I'm not saying I want Ellie and Abby to be like best buds, but like there was a lot of other factions in the world that were out there trying to like fuck them up or out there doing grimy stuff. If they could have came together and not seen each other as like the end all be all enemy, I think the game would have been a lot different. And so I say all that to say, Attack on Titan season 4, does The Last of Us Part 2 better than The Last of Us Part 2? I hope that wasn't too rambly, and I hope that my flow of consciousness made sense. But it was just crazy because as I'm watching Attack on Titan season 4, we're like halfway through, and I'm literally like, man, this is what The Last of Us could have been. Like, I really could have cared about Abby and the WLF if the story would have been told differently. And I think that is a main, that is a big thing to point out, that the story and the writing is a lot tighter in Attack on Titan than it was in The Last of Us. Like, I don't know if it was like too many hands in the pot type situation with The Last of Us, but like the game just needed a little bit more care, I think. And it could have been really good. Because the thing that makes it different than one is like, one is like such a tight story with like Joel and Ellie. And like, yeah, you got like your other, like, you know, Tommy's in that game, Joel's brother or whatever. And, you know, you know about the Fireflies and everything. But like the story is so tight with just Joel and Ellie. And that's really who you spend the bulk of your time with. And then trying to expand that in two, I think they could have done it if it just was done a little differently. Like if we would have had more time to sit with our characters, like with Abby and the WLF, I think it would have been a lot different. I think you as the player could sympathize a lot more with her, because that's the thing with Attack on Titan is in your head, as you're watching the show, you're like, oh, there's no way that I can like get behind what the Marlians are up to. But then like, by the time you've seen half of season 4, you're like, wait, maybe the Marlians aren't so bad. Like, yeah, they're doing some fuck shit, but like, maybe they're not so bad. And I really think that The Last of Us 2 could have done that if it was a little, I don't know, if the writing was a little tighter or if it was just reordered. Like, I think it needed another pass through, that's for sure. It needed, like, whoever was, like, in charge of, like, this main storyboard or, like, the main story, it just needed just one more pass through. Okay, maybe, like, 3 more pass throughs, and it could have been a lot better. And so, I don't know. It's a lot of feelings. I hope that made sense. Let me know what you guys think. Did you even think about Attack on Titan being compared to The Last of Us? Or is that just my weird brain? Yeah. This one was a lot. It's a lot more abstract, I think, than previous episodes. I feel like usually I just kind of like summarize like a book or something that I'm reading, whereas this one was more of like a thesis type thing. But I don't know. We got a couple fun books planned. We've got like a murder mystery. This one is just kind of tough though. Like, I swear I've been on the last chunk of writing these notes for the longest time, but like, I don't know if it's because it's like a murder, if it's a mystery type book, like the end is just kind of like, there's just a lot of moving parts and I'm trying to like really dissect it and get it straightened up and in a line for you so we're not all confused together. And then, like I said, we're going to bring Saga back because I just finished the new, what is it called? A volume, I guess, when it's like the five, yeah, a volume, when it's the five issues put together. And man, Saga is always something. You think you're having a good time? Just read some Saga. You're not going to have a good time. Like, why do I read this? It's so sad. It's so sad. But guys, hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to leave me a like and a comment. I always respond to my comments and I see each and every one of them. And if you haven't already, make sure to like rate and review, I guess that's what you say, on iTunes and on Spotify. I also see all of those. And yeah, if you have any if you have any suggestions of things that you want me to read and to talk about, let me know. Just might do it. And with that, guys, I'll see you later. Bye, everybody.